Go continue that. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the UMCS board meeting for August 26th, our first board meeting for the new school year. So, welcome, everyone. As a reminder, we're still doing this remotely because of Governor Newsom's order. So, with that, I am calling the meeting to order at 6:20 p.m.
Awesome.
All
And I will
right.
call the roll.
Yes, sir.
Christina.
Here.
Davis.
I am here.
And this is Greg. I'm here. Hey, Sin. I don't see a Sin. No. Okay. Jan. No Jan. Okay. Lauren.
I'm here.
Olivia. I don't see Olivia, right? Okay.
Right.
And Stacy.
Here.
All right, and we've got Krishna and Daniel as well. All right, we have quorum.
All right. With that, do we have a need to reorder any of our discussion items? All right, that sounds like a no. So we are moving on to 1D, Board and Community Appreciations. Do any of the board members have an appreciation?
Lauren, were you going to go? Sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
I was just thinking how to phrase it because I want to appreciate my classroom teachers and all the classroom teachers. I have just really appreciated them coming, hitting the ground running, stepping up for this, this really challenging and weird start of the school year and being, positive and enthusiastic and setting the classroom tone, wonderfully. And it just feels great to be back and want to give an appreciation to all the teachers and the staff who also helped make that happen. So thank you.
I definitely want to echo Lauren's appreciation. We're 9 days in, but it feels like it's been a tremendous start to the school year. I know my kids are super excited to go every day, amazing, getting messages from the teachers, the launch of Parent Square, the communications, all the back end stuff that I know Mr. Buck and Miss Rosie are doing to new attendance system, new lunch systems, new ARI systems, student information systems. And I know a little bit. I think we're going to get a little more about what all the training was for teachers, but I know there's was a ton of work that went in on the admin side too, just to help prepare long days during those summer weeks to including like getting gates made and stuff in the fence. So just so much appreciation. Thank you. Thank you for what you do.
I want to be more specific for a mega huge, extra ginormous appreciation for Buck and Rosie, who have both stepped up and taken on a whole bunch of new tasks and who meet with me daily. And I feel so supported by them, and I'm so lucky to have them on the team. Buck, you're here. Tell Rosie too.
I'd add Krishna to that list because she's also taken on a bunch of those things and learning a bunch of new skills.
I will pass it on. Thank you very much.
Are there any other appreciations, either from board members or from community members?
I'll just throw out one more just to all the students and families too. Just it's a big deal coming back. It can, I know for a lot of families it felt like a relief. For other families it still feels very risky. There's still a lot of anxiety out in the community, not just at Urban Montessori, but around the city and the country. So, we're still in this moment and going to be here for a moment longer. And so just appreciate folks showing up and asking for what they need too.
Yeah, just appreciate, I think, echo everybody else around just back to school. It's so amazing to have this opportunity for kids to be back and teachers to be back. And I know it's a lot happening with a lot of uncertain times, and just really appreciate everybody kind of pivoting multiple times every single day to make everything work and jumping in where there's different opportunities needed, whether that's like pick up or whatever that might be during recess, but just really appreciate everybody being all hands on deck, even after a full year and a half of that already, and continuing to show up for the kids.
I wanted to piggyback on the one for the teachers. And I know despite the difficult situation that we're reopening school in, I think the teachers mentioned yesterday at a whole staff meeting how that they thought this was the first year in the history of UMCS where all of the elementary classrooms had done the first great story within the first 9 days of school. So we're on track. We're like really excited about being on pace with where everyone should be. And staff are really supporting each other to make that happen. So
that's awesome.
They're really working real hard.
Yeah, I know we had some fun dinner conversation about the great lessons. So it was awesome that those were already out there and happening.
Right. Any other appreciations either from board members or from the community? We'll move on to 1E, board member comment. Are there any board members that have comments on items not on the agenda?
Great. Davis, I had one brief comment, which is just that, just a reminder that as far as we know, the governor's executive orders around kind of how we're able to do these Zoom meetings, it ends at the end of September. And so just to look ahead and that board members should be planning that starting October 1st for the October cycle of meetings and committees and everything, that we should plan on it being the traditional rules and that and in September, as much as possible, I thought we should try and do like at least hybrid. So if we can't, you know, as much as possible, try and start meeting on campus, but then we'll still, of course, have the Zoom available. So just, I can share more, I can send an email out with more information about that, but just wanted to kind of make sure folks knew that those rules don't last forever. And he could change them again, depending on what's going on, I guess, with the virus, but definitely starting in October where the rules are back in person. There were always ways to do kind of to join by phone. And so we can review those older methods of doing that. So we can still make that work, but it won't just be the default. That's it.
Gotcha. Okay. Any other board member comments on items not on the agenda? All right. Are there any presentations from the floor? Are there any items that the community would like to comment on that are not on the agenda? Anyone? All right, it doesn't appear so. So I will pass it on to Krishna for the head of school report.
All right, let me get my screen up for you. Well, it's August. Welcome back to school, everybody. Exciting to be back here, and I'm looking forward to doing meetings in person, hopefully next month. We don't have a lot of dates on our calendar yet, so as I was thinking about upcoming events, I was like, wow, that's something we need to work on like imminently. We tentatively put a back to school night on the calendar and are a little later than we normally do it, trying to think creatively about what that might look like at this time where we're still concerned about having the number of people that might come to campus on campus all together. So we'll talk more about that later, but we have a tentative date on the calendar for a back to school night, and we're looking forward to putting some time in the next week or two into like booking out our year-long calendar. We do have a continuation of our White Fragility book group on August 31st, and then Kara and I are talking about readathon kickoff, and we'll be sending more details on that soon, but that will be upcoming in September as well. So we're in person. It's awesome. We've had a really successful start so far and safe so far. And big notables is this is the first time all of our staff and students, TK through 8, have ever been on a single campus all together. And there are so many wonderful things that are popping up already, just having us in one place. The general feeling on campus is super positive and super collaborative and supportive. And it's just been really nice to be in physical space with each other, especially after a year of being so physically distanced. And we're really excited about all of the potential opportunities also for our students that are included in that. When we think about having our littlest to our eldest students all in the same space, there's a lot of opportunity available for mentoring and leadership for our students. Also really pleased that at this point still we're having a safe start. Everybody's been following our protocols really strictly with positive results, but also we're ready for when we end up with positive cases and exposures. And though we're pleased that we've been lucky so far, we're also planning ahead and planning forward for, you know, how we'll respond when that pops up, because I think it's a win, not an if. But we'll see. We'll keep fingers crossed that we'll get a little bit more time before we're talking more about that. Just got a couple of pictures. These aren't in the board. This is not in the public doc. I drafted the folder purposefully. I added pictures after. That's just a little pictures of classrooms. We realized we've been a little like kind of like unintentionally radio silent on photographs. And it's just because we're too busy. We forget to take them. We forgot to take pictures at PD. We forgot to take pictures pretty much most of the time because we're so busy just like having a great time with students and each other. But here's a couple of classrooms without kids. So I'm going to show this really briefly and then switch. Everybody's masked and hopefully unidentifiable in this picture. But some students at work in their classroom spaces. And I'm going to turn it over to Dan, who's going to talk a little bit about instructional updates and what we did in prep for the school year and what's been going on so far.
Yeah, so this year leading up to students arriving, we've really been focused on systems and creating systems to support teachers in the classrooms. And I know that talking in detail about systems isn't the most exciting thing to do, but I think they're really important pieces that we're putting in this year. So we'll just talk a little bit about some of the things that we've done. So the first group of things that we've done, it's called the Montessori Planning and Record Keeping. And we did that through in conjunction with Public Montessori in Action, or PMA. And the big pieces that we've done are around a curriculum map for all grades, record keeping that's tied to this curriculum map, common lesson planning tools, and then an observation tool to really inform lesson planning. So I'll talk briefly about each of those things. So that first one, the curriculum map is something that was developed by public Montessori teachers and teacher trainers from across the country over the summer. In distance learning last year, a lot of schools found it really supportive in distance learning to have a kind of a pacing for levels to stay together on, and moving into in-person learning, we didn't want it to be so rigid that everyone's giving the same lessons every day, but it's really helpful to have a map that helps you understand like how to move through the curriculum, not just the Montessori curriculum, but how to keep track of common core standards also. So a map was created for every grade level starting from 3 years old on, with it broken down into, if we go to the next slide, you can kind of get an idea of what it looks like. So it has all the areas of the classroom, and then month by month, like to stay on track, what are approximately the lessons you should be giving in each area for each grade level. And of course, we want to make sure that students are kind of going through the curriculum on their own path, but this is a guide to help us in that process. And the second piece is to go along with that, the curriculum map to help us plan is record keeping that matches that. So a lot of people come from different trainings, lessons are called different things. So Public Montessori in Action made a transparent classroom set, lesson set. Transparent Classroom is our online record keeping tool. So a lesson set that where the language matches the curriculum guide and is using a name that's not necessarily specific to a training, but something that identifies a lesson to the greatest number of people. So we're really excited to use that lesson set in Transparent Classroom. And it's also being used by a Angela Lillard, a researcher in Virginia, who's going to use data from this lesson set over the next couple of years as part of a study of like how students progress through not just Montessori curriculum, but through Common Core standards in a public Montessori setting. So here's kind of what it looks like in Transparent Classroom with all the subject areas and all the threads that you can follow in there. So on top of that, all levels are using common lesson planning tools. So the primary group, lower L, upper L, they're all, and the adolescent team is using a weekly lesson planning tool that's common across grade levels, so they're sharing resources in that way. And it also helps me in my coaching conversations to have kind of a unified look at how lessons are planned and how that looks going into the week. And on top of that, an observation tool that PMA also shared with us that's specific for looking at things that are happening in the classroom to inform your lesson plan. So whatever the students' interests are, what they might be gravitating towards, what they might be avoiding, all things that you take down in a form that lives with your lesson plan, your weekly lesson plans to inform what comes next. So that's kind of what it looks like, and that's available in classrooms for me to look at, but also for both teachers when they're sitting down to observe in class. So the second big piece that we're working on with staff with PMA again is called the System of Justness. And the System of Justness is really a whole school plan for how we respond to our students in need, and like making sure that our expectations of students and how we respond to students is one predictable and is the same wherever the student goes. And so the whole school, all staff, all operations, we're all part of the training around this. And making sure that we're collecting common data around that also, so that when we do bring that to, if we do bring student data to a team meeting or a level meeting, that we know what to expect and we know what it's going to look like across classrooms and across levels. Now, when we talk about that system of justice, there's three parts to it. And that strong Montessori implementation is something that we've been working on for years. Child study, that third piece, is something that we've been we've done over the last couple years. And the big training that we did this year is the Nautilus approach. So the piece that's in between that super proactive piece of having strong Montessori implementation in the classrooms, and then how we support our students that have the greatest amount of need or that need us the most. So that Nautilus approach is, it's traditionally like what you'd call a whole school behavior system, but a big piece of it is that it's not how you kind of go up the ladder of discipline. And it's really the goal of the Nautilus approach is it's always, we want the students in the classrooms and engaged with work. So it's more of this spiral of like, how do we take the steps to support the student, to bring them back to that center of working in the classroom. And it's been really nice to talk with teachers and role play situations and figure out like a common language around how we interact with students, that we're all on the same page, so that not just the staff, but the students know what are the expectations and like, how am I going to be supported back into the classroom, back to working? And so there's some pieces of it that, so like the important piece of the Nautilus approach is that it's really, it's a proactive piece. So a lot of the work is before anything happens, making sure that we're setting up an environment and supports for the students before they're getting to a later phase in this Nautilus system, and making sure that adult response is predictable is really interesting. Talking through the steps yesterday with staff, there's always realizations of like, oh, that's right. Like sometimes I'll like skip this step, or sometimes I don't say what happens in phase three in the exact same way. So I even had conversations with teacher today, the day after we did a refresher yesterday, where it was like, oh, it was really helpful to revisit that, because using that exact language, like it was, I got students back to work a lot quicker. So that's something that we're really trying to pay attention to and calibrate throughout the year. And those are the main systems we're working on currently with staff.
All right, back to me. Thanks, Daniel. Just a real fast update. If you didn't already know, we're no longer going up for renewal this year. I know we were talking a lot about this in the later months of last year, or since about last January, but based on changes in legislation, all charters that were up for renewal all of our charters have been extended by 2 years, and we'll be submitting our renewal petition in July or August of 2 years from now. And so we'll be back on that, but that's an exciting amount of time for us to continue to improve the work we're doing and collect more data to share with the county in our next petition. So I'm going to just give like really general enrollment updates, no numbers today, if that's all right with folks, because there's just a lot of stuff still up in the air. It's been a really strange and complicated enrollment year again. We're definitely down in enrollment. It's probably going to be much lower than what we had planned for, but it's a little unclear still at this point. TKK is particularly low in enrollment, but this is common across the city and I think in many schools right now. And also a lot of this is just has to do with continual changes and uncertainty in our current pandemic landscape. But we'll be giving more quantitative updates next month on where we're at, and should have more clarity of what we're looking at moving forward, both at the whole board meeting, but also finance committee, if you're interested in the fiscal impacts of that. It'll certainly be high on the agenda at that next meeting. So a little bit about staffing also. We did find ourselves kind of late in the summer, right before school started, making more. For some reason, my slide won't move forward. Oh, wait, there went like a million forward. We had some last minute hiring to do, but I'm really happy to report we're completely staffed in instructional positions. We just hired our last open instructional position yesterday, and they're starting Monday. And that's an occupational therapist, which was our last open position, student-facing position. And we're currently interviewing for our last operations position and an assistant site coordinator. I have several phone screenings this week, and we have interviews scheduled already for next week. So we're really pleased with the team that we put together and excited about moving forward. And that's it for us tonight. So if you have any questions, I'm going to drop out of the screen share.
I wanted to throw something in around staffing.
Go for it.
I think that we had some really strong candidates coming in really late in the game, and an appreciation for all of our new staff members who jumped in day before staff week, midway through staff week, last day of staff week, is where we have some really awesome new staff. So thank you to all of them, and just jumped right in.
I have a quick question for Daniel I think it reflects my lack of a education background, but can you clarify when you're talking about lesson planning, what the interface between, the training the teachers have received and how to present the Montessori materials and the curriculum map and the lesson planning pieces. I'm not sure where the boundaries of each of those categories are.
Of course, a lot of times when I'm talking about these things, I'm making assumptions that people can read my mind. So thank you for asking that question. So the curriculum map lists all the lessons that are in the Montessori curriculum, with a couple of very small additions for a couple of grades around things that aren't explicitly covered in the Montessori curriculum and are in Common Core. So it's 99.9% just straight Montessori lessons that are plugged into that curriculum map over the years of whatever level you're at. And then that lesson planning tool is more about like how you're plugging in those lessons into your week, like when you're going to give them and who you're going to give them to. Does that make sense?
So it's partly about which students are going to be presented which lessons at which time.
Yes.
Rather than how you're presenting the material or what material you're presenting.
Okay. Exactly. Because all of that is in the training and in your albums of all the lessons.
Right. Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Are there any other questions for Krishna or Daniel?
Any other questions or public comment?
I have a quick question. For the, in terms of the talking with teachers and sort of all the lesson planning and all that preparing and stuff, were you able to have a conversation about for this year as we're coming back to in-person, what sort of the expectations are for teacher communication with families, sort of what forms or what frequency?
Yeah, I can speak to that. That is on our early list of work to do with our site leadership team. We talked about it in PD with all staff as well as a heads up, and we don't feel comfortable as the admin team of dictating a specific timeline at this point. And we really wanted the staff to develop those systems, in collaboration with us and with families. But we definitely want to have some clarity about like, what are the expectations school-wide about like how frequently will classrooms send a classroom message and what are other frequencies of different types of communication that might happen between staff, like teachers and parents, but also the other way, like what are our expectations of communication coming from parents also, which is something that I know can take up a very significant amount of time for our teachers. So we want to like work with our community on that and our FAC leadership. And once we have some time to meet with staff.
Thank you.
I have one last question too about staffing, if I may. You mentioned that the last position you're looking to fill is the assistant site coordinator position. Can you speak to, has there been a restructuring of that role? To whom does the assistant site coordinator report?
given the changes we're facing and the immediate need for the people on the team, so that's me and Daniel and Buck and Rosie to take over pieces of work, we collaboratively agreed to invest in the people we have and invest in their growth and in their positions and hire somebody that we're comfortable training in their tasks rather than hiring somebody for tasks none of us knew how to do. So we're all learning things and we're excited to then have the opportunity to teach things we know well to somebody who will join our team.
Thank you.
Any other questions or public comment? All right, we will move on to Finance Committee. I will hand it over to Stacy.
All right, thank you. Okay. Can everybody see that okay? All right, so we can talk a little bit about where we ended last fiscal year. Some updates about state budgets that got finalized. That's since our last conversation. And then financial updates for where we are this year. and that's about it. So going into 2021, operating income increased. So we ended the year with a significant surplus. And this was a lot of it was the one-time funding that came down. As always, we also exceeded fundraising targets. So thank you all fundraising teams and supporters for making that happen. The implications of that is that it's helped us rebuild our fund balance, especially after some of the losses in FY19. So we ended, we're kind of now above the meetings county guidelines for the amount they would want us to have. And as of about July, we were at about 900K. So we're in pretty good shape there. In terms of state budget, so this was approved since we last chatted. And what we finalized with was that there is going to be an LCSF adjustment and increase as well as state special ed. And as Kisha mentioned, the charter is extended for another 2 years, but there is no STRS or PERS relief. So that was something we weren't sure was going to happen or not, and they finalized it as not happening at this point. So there's another ELO grant, this or opportunity. This is a different one from the one that we did apply to. They use the same name. And you can see what the overview is here. So still work in progress. We're going to continue learning more and following up on this, but you have an opportunity that's potentially available for us too. In addition, there are additional one-time funding that are in the works to be adopted later this year or next year. And that's an educator effectiveness grant to support additional educator support and training, as well as a TK planning grant, for Universal TK. So those are both in the works, and we'll continue sharing more with the board and the community as we figure out what that looks like and implications for Urban Montessori around access to these one-time funding opportunities. All right, now we had some deferrals, but we just wanted to review that we kind of revised a bunch of things and we're kind of having no more deferrals at this point in time. Is that right, team?
That shows like what was approved long ago. And then in January, the governor's proposal still had some. And then when they did refis, there were fewer deferrals, but then when they actually approved the budget, they approved a budget that required no new deferrals. And they also, on the next slide, they paid back those purple old deferrals a little earlier than they thought they would. So we're all good now.
Thanks, Greg. There's additional funding potentially coming. We talked about some of them already, but we're kind of just watching out to see what's happening here. We'll keep the team posted. And where we are, it's a forecast for where we are, because we're just barely into the new school year. But so far, additional state, there was more state revenue than expected that came in, some savings of comps and benefits, a little bit of depreciation savings, a little less with LCFF than we had forecasted, given that we were forecasting off our assumptions of the governors and the state budget. So we are still way ahead of our approved budget amount that we had of 74,000. We're at 119 currently forecasted. So thank you, team, for everything that people are doing to track this and getting clear on where we are financially. But we are going strong into this fiscal year.
There was one, well, never mind. We'll talk about it in a sec. I apologize. Do people have questions for the Finance Committee? And if you're new to the call, you know, in the document section on Board on Track, you can see the monthly breakdown row by row. The whole budget is there every month. You can see it in detail, what everything is getting spent on.
I guess as a member of the Finance Committee, I'd just like to take a little bit of time to recognize Alejandra Rodriguez. She has been our liaison from EdTech, and she has been amazing in her collaboration with Finance Committee and with Krishna. And she is moving on to greener pastures. She is leaving EdTech, so she has, she is, I guess, completing the last of her work with us. But on the positive side, we get Bryce back, and Bryce was awesome before Alejandra. So, like I said, just want to take a little bit of time and recognize all the work that Alejandra has done for UMCS. So,
hear, hear. Thank you, Alejandra, wherever you are. It's been amazing. And Bryce is also awesome. I'm putting that in the minutes.
Any questions from board members, or is there any public comment?
This is Jan. I had a question. Sorry if I missed this. But Krishna, I know you had said enrollment was down. I was wondering how, what that actually looks like in the budget.
Well, it's not reflected yet because we don't have solid numbers, but it'll definitely be reflected in the next next month and by Finance Committee next month.
Okay.
To some extent, we made some adjustments this month to pull back. I think five or more students on the budget and make some adjustments, but it's going to be more.
Okay.
Any other questions or public comment? If there is not, we will move on to Academic Oversight Committee. Jan,
sorry,
are you?
Davis. Oops, sorry to interrupt real quick. There was one more item, 3B, about the unaudited actuals. Just real quick.
I apologize.
No worries. So one of the things the Finance Committee looked at was our unaudited actuals, which EdTech helps us put together. And so they're basically, here we go. Sorry, one moment. Here we go. Is this the right one? Nope. Yeah. So they're basically the same forecast. This is how last year, this is our close of the books, unaudited. Like what Stacy just went through. This is just the document that we submit to the county. So it's all the same numbers, just in the county's report. So we need any discussion about this, and then a motion and a second and a vote to accept the unaudited actuals. So is there any question or public comment? Actually, yeah, about just last year's year-to-date finances. Okay, is there a public comment. Sorry, thank you.
Public comment on the unaudited actuals or last fiscal year?
Is there a motion to accept them?
I will move to accept those unaudited financials.
I second.
Okay, I'll call the roll. That was Stacy, right? Yep. Okay. Christina?
Yes, approve.
Davis?
Aye.
This is Greg, I say yes. Jan?
Yes.
Lauren?
Yes.
And Stacy?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Motion passes. Thank you. All right. With that, I will pass it on to Academic Oversight Committee. Jan?
Sure. I think Daniel and Krishna covered a lot of what we had talked about in our meeting. As a committee, we're very supportive and excited about all the systems that Daniel had mentioned and had also, heard positive things from the teacher. So we're excited to, see those in action this year. We also, I think, Daniel and Krishna didn't touch on this, but we spent time talking about summer school and heard that it, you know, was really, really great for the students who were there. We didn't see any particular data on it, but kind of talked about in the future, getting a list of the students who had attended and seeing what their kind of incoming fall scores are. And then we did review some spring NWA map data and saw that growth was not as strong, you know, fall to spring as it had been going in the winter. That is kind of not unique to urban Montessori either. You know, across the country, schools and districts were seeing that were kind of a lot was kind of holding holding steady mid-year and then, you know, growth tapering off. I think, you know, a lot we are not wanting to put kind of too much on the data. You know, I think questions around administration, some students who were in, you know, school, excited to be in school and not wanting to take the test. So maybe going quicker and think though that the fall assessments will be important baseline and really wanting to use those data to inform instruction and moving forward.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Jan. Are there any questions for Jan and academic oversight?
One other note, we did, our meetings are still gonna be on Tuesdays, but we moved up the time to 4:15 in case anyone wants to attend. The calendar I think is updated, but just that people know we shifted the time.
Got it. Is there any public comment? With that, we'll pass it over to Lauren for Family Advisory Council.
Okay. So I think I'm sharing my screen, although I'm having trouble seeing it. Okay. So first, a couple updates about what has gone on with the FAC since our last meeting. We hosted a family picnic on campus that was well attended by our incoming families. I think there were on the order of 30 people there. So that was great to be able to have a little in-person meeting and welcome some new families. And the FAC group is set up on Parent Square. We've got some new people who have joined the group, which is great to see. And we are continuing to talk to and invite and recruit new families to join the FAC. We did have a meeting yesterday, and the main focus was introducing what the FAC is to anyone who wanted to learn more about it, and had some good conversations about ideas that people are particularly interested in pursuing this year. And some of the things that came up were working on disaster preparedness in the classroom. We had a parent who had done some of this in their previous school, and we talked about things like emergency kits for students and some whether the FAC could support some of the campus-wide measures such as emergency water and updating the family handbook with emergency procedures for the new campus. And another topic that came up was there were several people interested in working not just with gardening, but also with art on campus. I think I'm going to take a minute here and ask Kara if you want to add any more detail about any of these.
There's a parent who has information about some grants from the land trust, and I'm not sure how that would work because it sounded like it involved making the campus public space, which I don't think would be really in line with what we want. But also just things like murals on campus, tapping artists in the community or artists who can project manage something like that, just sort of making a mark, our mark on the campus and making it feel like home for the families. We had one new parent who is an artist and has studied dance and would be very interested in like collaborating on on-campus events and things like that on weekends for families to be involved with.
Thank you.
And trees. We want trees on campus.
Okay. And then next up is what's coming up in the future for the FAC. We are having elections next month, both to fill our board seats and to fill, hopefully, several of the FAC officer positions. And our current plan is to get nomination forms out at the end of September and then hold elections in early October. And then for the board seats, at least, we hope to have new members in place for the October meeting. And as Krishna mentioned, we're resuming our White Fragility book group that Dr. Rogers Ard is facilitating. That's August 31st. And then the following session is scheduled for September 28th. And that is all I have. Kara, did you want to add anything else?
I think that's everything. The only thing I would add is fundraising is not really part of FAC, but it's sort of been falling under it. And as Krishna said, we're planning the readathon and trying to figure out how to make it sort of a classroom and out of classroom experience for everybody that people will enjoy.
Great. Thank you. Greg.
Lauren, I have a quick question. So yes. You're going to be running elections. I just don't know how the timing works. Is it such that like the folks who are running for the board seats, will they already know who they, like, will they be elected by the September board meeting or will they still be candidates then?
They will likely still be candidates then. We are encouraging interested people to come to the September meeting, but they will not be elected by that time.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. All candidates should come to certainly the September meeting, and if they can, and any committee meetings in September would be great too.
Yes. Well, I always encourage everyone to come to the board meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions? Okay.
All right, Christina, I will hand it over to you for Executive and Governance Committee.
Yeah, this month we talked about a lot of policy documents, different pieces that Krishna had us review, gave feedback. The meeting was just earlier this week, but I've had a really busy week. What else do we talk about, guys? That's the main thing I remember.
Yeah, I think the bulk of it really was all of the documents that are our governance documents that we will be voting on later in the general consent report.
Yep. And then we also talked to Krishna a little about the beginning of school and how that's going and all that.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, I That's exactly what we talked about. I was gonna say I'll also just take a moment. I'll just take a moment too to just remind folks, because we do have folks coming up, like as board members exit. So like Lauren, Olivia, when you exit the board, you need to do that form 700 again as you exit. And then new folks have to do it when they get on. So that's just another reminder here on the governance committee part of the agenda. And then I also wanted to make a note, or Krishna, you had something you wanted to share with us about the board.
Yeah. I sent all of you board members instructions on how to get fingerprinted for a new requirement from the county that all public schools are fulfilling. I think Greg has gone. Thank you, Greg. If you go, please let me know and I can check it. Like, we're paying for that. I sent you the forms you need. If you have questions, you can reach out to me or Greg, but it is a required deliverable to our authorizers. And so I need you to go ahead and do it.
Krishna, when were the forms sent? I don't know if I saw those in my email, but I may not have.
2 weeks ago, maybe. Greg, will you ping it back to the top of people's
box? Oh, I see it. It's the email that says new ACOE requirement for board members. Okay, I see it. Sorry. Yep. Okay,
yeah. So those forms, like, mean that, like, if you go to the location that I identify, you don't have to pay for anything, and it'll be covered by the school. But you can go to your local UPS and just do it with the same forms. Just make sure they have the numbers that are on that form. That's how it identifies that the results come to us, so that I can certify that I've background checked all of our board members.
So board members have to be live scanned. Interesting. Okay.
It's new.
Yeah, it is new. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we do that for volunteers though. So it makes some sense to me.
Yep.
So thank you for getting on that. We're overdue. I mean, I'll be real. I think every school is overdue on that because it was a surprise requirement. And I'm certain that ACOE will be like lenient in terms of our timelines, but I would like to have that completed well before the next meeting. So let me know if you need any support. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions on some of the consent report items. And I wonder if it makes sense since they were discussed in the executive committee meeting for me to bring those up now, or if I should wait until.
You could we won't take action on any of them now. We can definitely answer questions about them. That's fine.
Okay. So one is that looking at the COVID safety plan, I did not see anything that was clearly a request or expectation or requirement for families to notify the school if their student has a positive result. And I'm wondering why we do not have an expectation defined for that. Maybe you can just speak to that question.
I don't have any reason for that. We can easily add that if it's something that the board and the community thinks would be helpful. It's not a bad thing to have written down. And I do believe that we had that in other documents, but I think it would make sense to have it also in that document. That's why we love those public comments in those docs, because it'll often flag those items that maybe they're repeated in other spaces as well, but it makes sense to have them there. This is really just like, that document is very clearly based on the K-12 guidance given to all schools that doesn't say that.
It says,
Greg, you have additions?
No, I was just going to say, I think, you know, I'm just trying to think about the real life scenario. So there is something like a student with symptoms, like even if you don't have a positive diagnosis, if you have the guidelines say, if you have symptoms, you know, you have to stay home and you only come back with a negative. It doesn't say, when you go home with your symptoms and you get tested and you have a positive, like, please let us know. So I think we can definitely add that in even right now, later.
I don't think it even says if you go home with symptoms, you know.
It has options. You can either be home for X amount of time and like a negative test, or a longer time and no test. Like, there's if this thens on all of those symptom related items. So it does have, it is pretty specific about what you have to do.
But I don't
think
in
various cases.
It didn't look like telling the school. I mean, maybe there's no need.
That's
to
tell not them. Explicitly said. Yeah. So we're, I think Greg and I are saying we can add that explicit statement right now if that's helpful.
Yeah, I think that would,
I don't have any problem with that.
Okay, great.
I like the school would know that you went home with symptoms, right? And they're going to presume that you have COVID. That's until you prove it with a negative. But sure, you know, asking people to please go ahead and let us know when you really confirm. I think, you know, it could be that there might be issues of, I don't know if there's issues of privacy there. I don't think there is, but that might be why it's not included. But I think for our community, asking people to please notify, I mean, none of this has any, the school can't punish anybody, you know, if they don't follow the guidelines. So it's like, it's still, you know, people need to do their best and be good community members, right? That's what we all have to do.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that it's reasonable to say, you know, this is our request and, you know, what would help our community, even though it doesn't have any binding power, you know. And I guess I think that, you know, the school wouldn't necessarily know if someone stayed home with symptoms. They would just know that someone wasn't in class.
Right. They would know, right. They would know if someone was absent. And then usually if there's no, I'm pretty sure the routine is that if like you don't call, you know, or send in a note about why, you know, it's eventually you're going to get a call, you know, saying, well, what's going on? Where's the,
yeah.
You know, that yeah. kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's in there.
And then my other.
Did you add it already, Greg? Thank you. I was like, where am I going to put it? You beat me to it.
My other question was kind of the inverse of that is I know that I saw Krishna in one of your, I think maybe your most recent, well, one of your emails, you said that only the affected classroom would be emailed if there were a positive case. I could be wrong. But I guess I feel like, I know there is a balance between protecting privacy and I don't know, maybe not inciting alarm and transparency. And it feels to me like we should be attempting to, even though OUSD is not our authorizer, have the same level of communication as OUSD schools are having, even if only because, you know, I think it's the right thing to do.
I'm open to that. None of that is up for any kind of approval for tonight, and is definitely something that we can just discuss. And like, we have the power to shift in this or outside of these meetings at any moment as we see the need arise.
Okay, so that wouldn't be part of the COVID safety.
None of that is part of any of the plans that are up for. They're not formal policies. Like we don't have a communications policy at this moment, and we don't really know what the need's going to be yet. I assume there's going to be a need, and I'm definitely watching and tracking what other schools and systems are doing as they've had need prior to us. And it is a balance of like inciting, you know, panic is not going to be helpful for us. And we're definitely going to err on the side of extra safety in all cases.
Right. I mean, we can, as you say, it doesn't have to be voted on as part of this. I can imagine something like having a dashboard that people can refer to, or by dashboard, it could be.
I would love for somebody to facilitate that dashboard for me.
It'd be it wonderful. Could be as simple
we have a volunteer.
As,
yes.
You know, an Excel spreadsheet, a Google Doc, or, you know, it can certainly be simple, and I can help with that. But I think having, you know, putting that information out there is worth you know, deciding how to do it and doing it.
Hi, this is Melissa. May I say something on that?
Yeah, definitely. Go ahead.
I totally agree with Lauren. And I remember there used to be communication if someone had lice and there was a notice about there had been lice outbreak. And so I would hope that with a pandemic, if there was a positive case in our school, that there would be some kind of communication. Of course, you don't have to say which classroom or whatever, but just that there was a positive case.
I'm open to that. I think with lice, it was only the exposed, it's only the classroom, but they're not really comparable. But there are like other requirements for other things like lice and infectious items that show up, like hand, foot, and mouth. There's like requirements from the health department on how you notify, and they haven't given guidance on that I know of, but I'll do a little bit more research. I'm flexible. Like, I'm gonna take, if the board has strong feelings, like they'll direct me on that, and I'm happy to.
You know, Christian, for me, I think you and I maybe on our own talked about this. I had a hunch that, you know, folks, I appreciated your note where you said, like, probably you're all going to tell each other anyway, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's what you put in the comms. Like, we're going to keep it. We're going to communicate to the, you know, the students that are close contacts and the classroom community, and that we understand it might get shared more broadly. You know, I think you get, this is your call. Talk with your teachers, talk with your ops team about what you want to do, you know, and you could do it either way. I think there's good reasons on kind of different sides of this idea. Like, I think there's good reasons why a brief message to the whole community could be the right way. And I also understand that you don't want to like fuel things that aren't actually in the health and wellness of the school community if they're not actually going to help people stay safer. But it's a tough time, and if other local schools and districts are going one way versus another, that's another thing we could do. So we've got an example from OUSD. We could also do, I could do a little poking around seeing how other local systems are thinking about this issue too. Just so you have some more,
I just wrote to Krishna. Yeah, I have info from our school, and I have a friend who's a school nurse at two other school systems. So Krishna, I'm happy to put her in touch with you, you know, in terms of that protocol. And I'm happy to talk to you about what our school has done. We had one example that I could tell you about. So just let me know.
Thank you.
Other questions for the committee or our work on any of those policies, or about Form 700 or about, what else do we talk about? I guess that's about it. Oh, and I did, I had a phone call with a potential new board member today. They couldn't make tonight's meeting, but I, like Lauren, you're doing with the candidates, I encourage them to just start showing up and getting to know us, and so that we could also get to know them as well. Any other public comment? Okay, then I think we can move on to, oh, I guess B. Do we need any new committee? There's no new members to take action on, but are there any new committee changes we need this month? I don't think so. Guessing we're good. All right, I can do 7A real quick on under other business. Is that okay, Davis?
Yes, please.
So a couple updates. I know that Oakland side, I know Oakland Unified is working to expand their access to testing. There was a resolution on the floor of their board meeting last night that was amended. And then ultimately passed as amended, but without the support of the original authors, the amendment was trying to, I think, thread a needle there of trying to put pressure on and expand access to testing, but also realize that testing right now, testing capacity is really stretched in the Bay Area, and there's just only so much schools can do at this moment. And then now I'm blanking on the other update I wanted to share from the OUSD board meeting. I'm sorry. And then at Alameda County, I just wanted to share, they've gone back to what I believe, like what they're calling a hybrid meeting structure, where the board is meeting in person, but public is accessing the meetings via Zoom for now. And so I think that's like, that was like I was saying at the top of the meeting, I think we should continue to follow the lead, I think, of our authorizing board. And so there may be some times coming up public where us board members are meeting in person, because that's kind of what we need to start doing again, but the public will still be on Zoom. And then as Alameda County keeps adjusting, we'll keep adjusting as we all keep moving along on this. I guess I could also share, there are a couple of elections going on right now. So if you are in Assembly District 18, make sure you get out and vote. There's two people running for Assembly District. And then also there is what is called the recall election. And so make sure you've got your ballot for that and make sure you vote. Don't sit it out. Vote, vote, vote. And if you want to know how I voted, come talk to me later.
Thanks, Greg. Are there any other questions or comments on the Oakland and California updates? Okay. If not, we will move on to the minutes from the June 24th meeting. Any questions or comments on those minutes? All right. If there aren't, can I have a motion on those minutes, please?
I'll move, Christina.
Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Thanks, Stacy.
Thanks, Stacy. Christina. Christina, how do you vote?
Sorry, I didn't get two buttons enough. Aye.
Davis.
Aye.
I vote aye. Jan.
Aye.
Lauren.
Aye.
Stacy.
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
Thank you, everyone. Greg, just clarification on the general consent report, because we talked about it above. We're clear to vote on the entire report.
We are. We're clear. Lauren, you don't want to, okay. You can ask. Any member can pull any of them for its own separate discussion and action.
No, I'm all set. Thanks.
So I think you can get a motion to approve, unless there's any discussion or comment on anything in the general consent. This is your chance. Anyone has a public comment or discussion on anything in there.
If there are no questions or public comments on the general consent report, can I get a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve it.
I will second that motion, Greg.
Thanks. Christina.
Aye.
There you go. Davis.
Aye.
This is Greg. I say aye. Jan.
Aye.
Lauren.
Aye.
And Stacy. Stacy, we didn't hear your vote.
Oops.
All right.
She is on mute.
All right. She can miss this vote. That's fine. Moving on.
Motion back.
Snooze, you lose.
All right. Are there any items that we need to collect for future meetings? Right. As always, the board members, you can just go ahead and go in and edit the agenda for the next board meeting if you so choose to do so. All right, with that, we will move into closed session. Greg, I always forget how we handle this. Is it anyone who wants to come back and be notified can, or they can just check their notes?
Yep. So we're going to go into closed session on the topic of public employee performance evaluation for head of school. If you're new to our meetings, we do this every meeting. And so we pause the recording and it's just the board and the head. It's just our time about our support of the head and her performance. And so if you want to come back at the end of closed session, we can let you know when that is, and you can come back on. We report out loud, you know, if we took any action, if we took any votes during closed session. All that reporting also goes into the minutes, and it's also audio recorded. And then as soon as we're done, announce whatever those announcements are, we adjourn the meeting. I guess we could do this. I'm not sure you can even do public comment on closed session. So let's forget what I said. There's none of that. So if you want to come back, you should let us know. I'll put in the Zoom chat right now. The easiest way is if you want to come on back at the end, just shoot me a text. There's my number, and I'll make sure to text you back and say, come on in. And it's the same link and that's it. And then you can hear the end of the recording. And that's it. Or you can say goodnight now and you can read the minutes when I post them later tonight.
You just recorded your cell phone number to a public meeting too.
Well, I don't know if the chat gets recorded. It's all good. And my phone number's out there. My phone number's everywhere. Phone numbers are not public. They're directory information. They're not private.
Gotcha. Thank you all. Good night.
Good night, Mel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
Night.
Thank you. I also need a hop.
Okay. All right. Good night, Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
All right. So before we go into closed session here at 7:31, and no one has notified me, so let me pause the recording one moment.
It does look like there's still a parent on.
We still have Deb.
Yep. Well, let me pause the recording and we'll figure out what we're doing and we'll make sure Deb is all set.
Okay.
Yeah, but where do I pause the recording? Here. There it is.
Okay. Hello, everyone. It is 8:11. We are returning to open session. There were no actions taken from closed session. And if that is it, we are going to adjourn the meeting at 8:11 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.